Chapter 10. I fall into disgrace, if the room to which my bed was removed were a sentient thing that could give evidence, I might appeal to it at this day who sleeps there now, I wonder, to bear witness for me, what a heavy heart I carried to it. I went up there, hearing the dog in the yard bark after me all the way, while I climbed the stairs, and, looking as blank and strange upon the room as the room looked upon me, sat down with my small hands crossed, and thought. I thought of the oddest things. Of the shape of the room, of the cracks in the ceiling, of the paper on the walls, of the flaws in the window glass making ripples and dimples on the prospect, of the washing stand being rickety on its three legs, and having a discontented something about it, which reminded me of Mrs. Gummidge under the influence of the old one. I was crying all the time, but, except that I was conscious of being cold and dejected, I am sure I never thought why I cried. At last in my desolation I began to consider that I was dreadfully in love with little Emily, and had been torn away from her to come here, where no one seemed to want me, or to care about me, half as much as she did. This made such a very miserable piece of business of it, that I rolled myself up in a corner of the counterpane, and cried myself to sleep. I was awoke by somebody saying, "Here he is!" and uncovering my hot head. My mother and Peggotty had come to look for me, and it was one of them who had done it. "Davy," said my mother, "what's the matter?" I thought it was very strange that she should ask me, and answered, "Nothing." I turned over on my face, I recollect, to hide my trembling lip, which answered her with greater truth. "Davy," said my mother. "Davy, my child." I dare say no words she could have uttered would have affected me so much then as her calling me her child. I hid my tears in the bedclothes, and pressed her from me with my hand, when she would have raised me up. "This is your doing, Peggotty, you cruel thing!" said my mother. "I have no doubt at all about it. How can you reconcile it to your conscience, I wonder, to prejudice my own boy against me, or against anybody who is dear to me? What do you mean by it, Peggotty?" Poor Peggotty lifted up her hands and eyes, and only answered, in a sort of paraphrase of the grace I usually repeated after dinner, "Lord forgive you, Mrs. Copperfield, and for what you have said this minute, may you never be truly sorry." "It's enough to distract me," cried my mother. "In my honeymoon too, when my most inveterate enemy might relent, one would think, and not envy me a little peace of mind and happiness. Davy, you naughty boy. Peggotty, you savage creature. Oh, dear me." Cried my mother, turning from one of us to the other, in her pettish willful manner, "what a troublesome world this is, when one has the most right to expect it to be as agreeable as possible." I felt the touch of a hand, that I knew, was neither hers nor Peggotty's, and slipped to my feet at the bedside. It was Mr. Murdstone's hand, and he kept it on my arm as he said, "What's this? Clara, my love, have you forgotten? Firmness, my dear. I am very sorry, Edward," said my mother. "I meant to be very good, but I am so uncomfortable." he answered. "That's a bad hearing, so soon, Clara." "I say it's very hard I should be made so now," returned my mother, pouting, "and it is very hard, isn't it?" He drew her to him, whispered in her ear, and kissed her. I knew as well, when I saw my mother's head lean down upon his shoulder, and her arm touch his neck, I knew as well, that he could mold her pliant nature into any form he chose, as I know, now, that he did it. "Go you below, my love," said Mr. Murdstone. "David and I will come down, together. My friend," turning a darkening face on Peggotty, when he had watched my mother out, and dismissed her with a nod and a smile, "do you know your mistress's name?" apostrophe apostrophe, she has been my mistress a long time, sir, apostrophe answered Peggotty, I ought to know it. Apostrophe that's true, apostrophe he answered. But I thought I heard you, as I came upstairs, address her by a name that is not hers. She has taken mine, you know. Will you remember that? Apostrophe, Peggotty, with some uneasy glances at me, curtsied herself out of the room without replying, seeing, I suppose, that she was expected to go, and had no excuse for remaining. When we two were left alone, he shut the door, and sitting on a chair, and holding me standing before him, looked steadily into my eyes. I felt my own attracted, no less steadily, to his. As I recall our being opposed thus, face to face, I seem again to hear my heart beat fast and high. David, apostrophe he said, making his lips thin, by pressing them together, if I have an obstinate horse or dog to deal with, what do you think I do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know. Apostrophe, I beat him. Apostrophe, I had answered in a kind of breathless whisper, but I felt, in my silence, that my breath was shorter now. I make him wince, and smart. I say to myself, I'll conquer that fellow, and if it were to cost him all the blood he had, I should do it. What is that upon your face? Apostrophe, dirt, apostrophe, I said. He knew it was the mark of tears as well as one. But if he had asked the question 20 times, each time with 20 blows, I believe my baby heart would have burst, before I would have told him so. You have a good deal of intelligence for a little fellow, apostrophe he said, with a grave smile that belonged to him, and you understood me very well, I see. Wash that face, sir, and come down with me. Apostrophe, he pointed to the washing stand, which I had made out to be like Mrs. Gummidge, and motioned me with his head to obey him directly. I had little doubt then, and I have less doubt now, that he would have knocked me down without the least compunction, if I had hesitated. Clara, my dear, apostrophe he said, when I had done his bidding, and he walked me into the parlor, with his hand still on my arm, you will not be made uncomfortable any more, I hope. We shall soon improve our youthful humors. Apostrophe, God help me, I might have been improved for my whole life, I might have been made another creature perhaps, for life, by a kind word at that season. A word of encouragement and explanation, of pity for my childish ignorance, of welcome home, of reassurance to me, that it was home, might have made me dutiful to him in my heart henceforth, instead of in my hypocritical outside, and might have made me respect instead of hate him. I thought my mother was sorry to see me standing in the room so scared and strange, and that, presently, when I stole to a chair, she followed me with her eyes more sorrowfully still missing, perhaps, some freedom in my childish tread, but the word was not spoken, and the time for it was gone. We dined alone, we three together. He seemed to be very fond of my mother. I am afraid I liked him none the better for that, and she was very fond of him. I gathered from what they said, that an elder sister of his was coming to stay with them, and that she was expected that evening. I am not certain, whether I found out then, or afterwards, that, without being actively concerned in any business, he had some share in, or some annual charge upon the profits of, a wine merchant's house in London, with which his family had been connected from his great-grandfather's time, and in which his sister had a similar interest. But I may mention it in this place, whether or no. After dinner, when we were sitting by the fire, and I was meditating an escape to Peggotty without having the hardihood to slip away, lest it should offend the master of the house, a coach drove up to the garden gate, and he went out to receive the visitor. My mother followed him. I was timidly following her, when she turned round at the parlor door, in the dusk, and taking me in her embrace as she had been used to do, whispered me to love my new father, and be obedient to him. She did this hurriedly and secretly, as if it were wrong, but tenderly, and, putting out her hand behind her, held mine in it, until we came near to where he was standing in the garden, where she let mine go, and drew hers through his arm. It was Miss Murdstone who was arrived, and a gloomy-looking lady she was, dark, like her brother, whom she greatly resembled in face and voice, and with very heavy eyebrows, nearly meeting over her large nose, as if, being disabled by the wrongs of her sex from wearing whiskers, she had carried them to that account. She brought with her two uncompromising hard black boxes, with her initials on the lids in hard brass nails. When she paid the coachman, she took her money out of a hard steel purse, and she kept the purse in a very jail of a bag which hung upon her arm by a heavy chain, and shut up like a bite. I had never, at that time, seen such a metallic lady altogether as Miss Murdstone was. She was brought into the parlor with many tokens of welcome, and there formally recognized my mother as a new and near relation. Then she looked at me, and said, "Is that your boy, sister-in-law?" My mother acknowledged me. "Generally speaking," said Miss Murdstone, "I don't like boys." "How do you do, boy?" Under these encouraging circumstances, I replied that I was very well, and that I hoped she was the same, with such an indifferent grace, that Miss Murdstone disposed of me in two words. "Once manner." Having uttered which, with great distinctness, she begged the favor of being shown to her room, which became to me from that time forth a place of awe and dread, wherein the two black boxes were never seen open, or known to be left unlocked, and where, for I peeped in once or twice, when she was out, numerous little steel fetters and rivets, with which Miss Murdstone embellished herself when she was dressed, generally hung upon the looking glass in formidable array. As well as I could make out, she had come for good, and had no intention of ever going again. She began to help my mother next morning, and was in and out of the store close at all day, putting things to rights, and making havoc in the old arrangements. Almost the first remarkable thing I observed in Miss Murdstone was, her being constantly haunted by a suspicion that the servants had a man secreted somewhere on the premises. Under the influence of this delusion, she dived into the coal cellar at the most untimely hours, and scarcely ever opened the door of a dark cupboard without clapping it to again, in the belief that she had got him. Though there was nothing very airy about Miss Murdstone, she was a perfect lark in point of getting up. She was up and, as I believe to this hour, looking for that man, before anybody in the house was stirring. Peggotty gave it as her opinion that she even slept with one eye open, but I could not concur in this idea, for I tried it myself, after hearing the suggestion thrown out, and found it couldn't be done. On the very first morning after her arrival she was up, and ringing her bell at cock crow. When my mother came down to breakfast, and was going to make the tea, Miss Murdstone gave her a kind of peck on the cheek, which was her nearest approach to a kiss, and said, "Now, Clara, my dear, I am come here, you know, to relieve you of all the trouble I can. You're much too pretty and thoughtless." As my mother blushed but laughed, and seemed not to dislike this character to have any duties imposed upon you that can be undertaken by me. "If you will be so good as give me your keys, my dear, I'll attend to all this sort of thing in future." From that time, Miss Murdstone kept the keys in her own little jail all day, and under her pillow all night, and my mother had no more to do with them than I had. My mother did not suffer her authority to pass from her without a shadow of protest. One night when Miss Murdstone had been developing certain household plans to her brother, of which he signified his approbation, my mother suddenly began to cry, and said she thought she might have been consulted. "Clara," said Mr. Murdstone sternly. "Clara, I wonder at you." "Oh, it's very well to say you wonder, Edward," cried my mother, "and it's very well for you to talk about firmness, but you wouldn't like it yourself." Firmness, I may observe, was the grand quality on which both Mr. and Miss Murdstone took their stand. However, I might have expressed my comprehension of it at that time, if I had been called upon. I nevertheless did clearly comprehend in my own way that it was another name for tyranny, and for a certain gloomy, arrogant, devil's humor that was in them both. The creed, as I should state it now, was this. Mr. Murdstone was firm. Nobody in his world was to be so firm as Mr. Murdstone. Nobody else in his world was to be firm at all, for everybody was to be bent to his firmness. Miss Murdstone was an exception. She might be firm, but only by relationship, and in an inferior and tributary degree. My mother was another exception. She might be firm, and must be, but only in bearing their firmness, and firmly believing there was no other firmness upon earth. It's very hard, apostrophe said my mother, that in my own house, apostrophe, my own house? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Mr. Murdstone. Clara, apostrophe, our own house, I mean, apostrophe, faltered my mother, evidently frightened. I hope you must know what I mean, Edward. It's very hard, that in your own house I may not have a word to say about domestic matters. I am sure I managed very well before we were married. There's evidence, apostrophe said my mother, sobbing. Ask Peggotty if I didn't do very well when I wasn't interfered with. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Edward, apostrophe said Miss Murdstone, let there be an end of this. I go tomorrow. Apostrophe, Jane Murdstone, apostrophe said her brother, be silent. How dare you to insinuate that you don't know my character better than your words imply. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am sure, apostrophe, my poor mother went on, at a grievous disadvantage, and with many tears, I don't want anybody to go. I should be very miserable and unhappy if anybody was to go. I don't ask much. I am not unreasonable. I only want to be consulted sometimes. I am very much obliged to anybody who assists me, and I only want to be consulted as a mere form, sometimes. I thought you were pleased, once, with my being a little inexperienced and girlish. Edward, I am sure you said so, but you seem to hate me for it now. You are. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.